Tonight on the Big Footy Blues podcast, we discuss Sunday night's game versus Port Adelaide. We look at who's on fire and who's under the pump. And we hit the boards and find out what people are talking about. All this and more, coming right up. Welcome to episode 4 of the Big Footy Blues podcast for 2014. Yes, it's ODN still in the hosting chair, despite the petition being circulated. With me here in the podcast cyber lounge, curled up on a beanbag with wine glass in hand, it's Meb. Hi, Mebby.
Hi.
In front of the mirror, practicing his Liam Neeson quips, pending confirmation of Brian Taylor's commentary demise, it's Shandog.
How you doing?
Have we just woken up from a nap on the couch to find her mum cooking her dinner, it's Bluebell.
Oh, thank you. And not tonight, unfortunately.
And over at the pool table, holding his cue stick with intent, it's Happy Dude.
Hello.
I think that was
better than anything I could have said.
Ladies and gentlemen, we kicked off round one on Sunday night against Port Adelaide, and Carlton led at the end of every quarter, except the one that mattered, going down 12-15-87 to 18-12-120. For Carlton, Allard, Curnow and Gibbs and Wake kicked two goals each, and singles to Thomas, Everett, Yaron and Garlett. The main contributors for Port Adelaide were Westhoff with 5 and Gray with 4, and don't we know about it. Listed in the best for Carlton were Gibbs, Simpson, Henderson, Curnow and Murphy. I wonder where that came from. Does anybody have any thoughts on the game and how it went down? Who wants to go first?
Yeah, why not? I thought, obviously, we started very, very well. Yeah, sort of the roll on that we got going. I got a text message from a couple of Adelaide supporting friends telling me that they already thought the game was over 15 minutes into that first quarter. Shame we couldn't keep that roll on. Obviously, as the game went on, Port sort of settled themselves and came back like we thought they would in the week leading up. We thought Port's far too good a team to get just roll over like that. Not sure exactly what happened in the last quarter. Watched the replay, trying to work it out. We were keeping up with them as far as pace goes, but we just couldn't get any tackles to stick or any passes to go where we want them. Disappointing in the end, but it's only round one and we got Richmond this week, so we should hopefully get a nice win up against the Tigers.
Chandog, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I was watching it in the company of my wife. I tried to keep fairly calm, but it didn't happen too often. The skill levels were just so ordinary at some points. Like Happy Dude said, the start was brilliant, and then it just faded away so quickly after that. The amount of times we kicked into a man on the mark and kicked to two-on-ones and things like that, it was just really frustrating to watch. And even though we kept in it a fair bit, about 5 minutes into that first quarter, that last quarter, you just kind of knew inside it was all over.
Speaking of kicking onto the man of the mark, was it you, Shandog, who made a comment on the boards about that?
Who was that?
Somebody was made a comment about trying to drop kick their membership into the microwave, but they hit the man on the mark.
Yeah. Yeah. I nominated them for poster of the year for March. Who was it? I'll have a look.
Yeah. I think it was Sharks on a Plane.
Sharks on a Plane, yeah. 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 Absolute gold.
Yeah, that was good. Good call.
Yeah. Mev, did you have any thoughts?
Oh, I had so many thoughts, but I can't repeat
anything you
want
to share with us?
I don't know what the censorship is like on this thing. I think my disappointment started with the fact that it was a Sunday night game and we're playing Port. So it was really disappointing to see only 24,000 people there. Obviously, I can understand why. I don't think I saw one child there for obvious reasons. But there was no atmosphere from Carlton supporters whatsoever. So all I could hear was the Port cheer squad, and I was sitting just behind the Carlton interchange, so it's not like I was sitting behind them, but that's all I could hear all game was their cheer squad. And I think I heard maybe two people yell out for Carlton apart from myself, so it was really disappointing to hear that there was literally no atmosphere there from us whatsoever. I hated that Menzel was sub. I don't like that at all. I hated that we only used 86 rotations when people were begging to come off. Like, I saw Wade come to the bench and get told to turn around and get back on. I saw that happen to quite a few players, so I'm not really sure what the game plan was there. I loved Allard, though. I thought Allard was really, really good on a positive note, and I even turned to my friend and said, Eddie who, which obviously I take back now, but at the time I felt very passionate about. So I think Allard is doing a lot to prove his doubters wrong. He's like kind of just, you know, an everyman footballer. And I'm really happy with the way he's going. I think Watson has copped it quite a bit unfairly. But yeah, that's my thoughts. Hopefully we can turn it around and use that to spur us on next week.
Oh, very good. Bluebell, what did you think?
Look, I was just disappointed. We, you know, couldn't maintain the intensity we did in the first quarter. But I just think a lot of our players are underdone, and I guess what disappoints me is just our fans who, you know, I listened to Farnie on SEN on the way home, and just the number of people that were ringing up saying, you know, our season's over after one game. Like, it was very clear to me that Cruiser was running around on one leg. He couldn't even jump. You know, there was just so many players underdone. Hendo was underdone. You know, we just got outran in that last quarter, and, you know, they were first to the ball, and that really hurt. But good sign was when Port kicked those first four goals in the third quarter, we were able to get the lead back late in that quarter. So, you know, they managed that. But, yeah, it was just a shame they couldn't run out the game. But let's bring on next Thursday, I suppose.
Yeah, you make mention of the intensity in the first quarter, and it was absolutely manic. And I saw some stats somewhere that said it was as good as Collingwood 2010 and the pressure they used to put on. But, you know, we only did it for a quarter. In the end, we ended up 52 disposals down on Port and 16 tackles. So it was an incredible turnaround. I don't get why we only made 84 interchanges either. Some people are cynically saying maybe Mix preparing for next year when they lower the cap again, but a very strange situation. One thing I did note is we had 11 players. I like to consider, say, maybe for an inside or a contested game, 65% efficiency is probably acceptable in a tight contest. We had 11 players below that. Below that efficiency percentage, and Port only had four. And I think it's won and lost there in the fact that we absolutely butchered the ball. And I'm not going to single out players, but there were some with really low numbers. We can't carry too many players in the side that lack that polish. So where we go from there and what our side looks like after that, I'm not quite sure.
I think there was a lot of it discussed afterwards about what the actual structure of the team was or what the tactics were that we used, and that disposal efficiency probably has a lot to do with the fact that we keep trying to kick long where we just don't seem to have those marking targets you need to effectively do it, like Malthouse used to do with Collingwood a couple of years ago, and you've got those big gorilla forwards to come up the ground and take the marks, and we just don't really seem to have that. I mean, we're trying to play that game style, and we don't even have Casbolt on the team, who's the best contested mark. It's very strange.
I mean, although Wadey did take three contested marks and a couple of absolute beauties, so... He's when he gets a run at it, he's still in pretty good form. Wookie has kindly tallied up the 2014 Player of the Year votes for round one, and the best player of the week and getting the five votes was Ed Curnow with 128 votes. Cade Simpson got the four. 112 votes from the Big Footy faithful. The three votes went to Bryce Gibbs on 92, two votes to David Allard on 78, and one vote to Michael Jemison on 42. And the best new blue went to Tommy Bell. All seemed pretty straightforward.
I didn't think Bell had that much of an impact, actually. That surprised me. Sorry.
Sorry, Bell.
Yeah, but who was he up against? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There weren't other... many new blues who did anything, so yeah. I guess I mean, he didn't probably do anything too fantastic, but he did throw himself in there at everything and, like...
Yeah, I thought he did all right myself, like, sitting there at the game. I saw him, especially as the ball on a few times would come into the forward 50, like, he was in there helping deliver it, make sure it went in and chasing it up. Like, I thought he did all the right things.
I think he involved himself in a lot, whether or not, like, he did pinpoint kicks or anything like that probably didn't happen, but he did throw himself in there. And worked his ass off. And I know he got subbed off. People are saying, why was he taken off as opposed to other people who I won't name. But I think he injured himself at one point, like, or he pulled up sore or something, and that's why he got taken off.
Yeah, that would make sense. I saw a fair few of our players cramping up in the last quarter. There was one point where I saw Henderson limping really badly. I thought he'd hurt himself.
Yeah,
like, that was just in front of where I was. And I thought, oh, God, we're going to lose him for weeks now. And then... Tommy Bell did a kick in and looked like he did his hamstring as he kicked the ball, and I thought, there goes two of our defenders, but they stayed out there and apparently they're not injured. So yeah. I reckon that went a long way to that blowout margin at the end as well, was our two defenders couldn't compete anymore. They couldn't run or jump after that.
But on the votes, like, I'm really happy that Kono got it because I think he did deserve it.
Yeah.
He worked the whole game.
He showed a bit of toe, didn't he? I had to look twice. He looked like Jeffy Garlett flashing through there on a couple of occasions. It really surprised me the pace that he seems to have gained. Bell wasn't up against much for the Best New Blue. Menzel, Watson, Thomas, Everett and McInnes, so you can kind of understand why people voted for him. Speaking of Daisy, his first game in the Navy Blue, it'd be remiss of us not to have a bit of a chat about how he went. Anybody want to take that?
I didn't think he did too badly. Considering the amount of football he's missed, especially at, obviously the top level through injury and whatnot, and with it being an ankle injury as well, there's a confidence that he has to get back into his kicking. He hasn't always been the best set shot, and even as a Collingwood player, I always used to, like, make fun of him with my mates and, like, my mum and stuff about him being the almost player. He always almost does something brilliant, but never quite pulls it off. Like, he'll almost take that big mark, he'll almost keep it in bounds and kick a great goal, or, you know, and he'll hit the post. And he seemed to do that for us as well, become the almost player again. But he does pull it out in big games. I reckon you can't judge him harshly on one game, especially after all the football he's missed. So give him the rest of the season before anyone starts praising him or pulling out the knives, depending on how he goes.
Yeah, I guess. I just didn't remember him being such a bad set shot. But, maybe I romanticise the fact that he was coming over and he was once considered one of the best players in the competition. But...
I think everyone's romanticised it a little bit. Like, the way people were talking just before the game, it was like we'd pulled, you know, Gary Ablett's clone, you know, from draft pick number, you know, 89 or something. Like, he was going to be this next big absolute game changer. Whoever had him was going to win every game.
Yeah, how excited did everyone get when he kicked that goal, though?
Yeah,
I was pretty damn excited. Yeah, it looked like it was going to hit me in the face.
The roof came off Eddie had. It was amazing. Yeah. And then after that, he couldn't really kick much. But, you know, I guess we've got to, like, be patient with him. And like you said, Happy Dude, is just give him a chance. He has missed a lot of football and he's not the Messiah. So he's not going to come along and just save our skins every game. And nor should he, because we need to. I mean, we did it with Judd for all those years where we relied on him, one person, to win us every game. And we can't rely on Daisy to do the same. So I think people just need to give it more of a chance. I think some people had really unrealistic expectations for how we were going to go during that game and how Daisy was going to go and how our season's maybe going to go, and that's why they're so disappointed. But I didn't think he did too badly.
No, not at all. He kind of... he was out of the game a little bit sort of towards the end of it, but he wasn't alone there. He had lots of company in that.
Yeah.
Mm.
When he kicked his third point, I said... send him back to Collingwood, but I was just joking, but everyone around me laughed, so that was good.
I was just happy laughing, going, that was almost a goal.
The Port Adelaide guy behind me, who wouldn't shut up all game and I nearly got in a slap fight with, he was like, you're not worth your 900 grand a year, Daisy. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake. I could start at 600 and we're nearly up to a million. Like seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it's time for a little bit of news.
Defender Andrew Walker will miss Carlton's Round 2 clash with Richmond after accepting a one-match ban for rough conduct. Walker was reported for throwing Port Adelaide's Angus Monfries into the fence in the final quarter of Sunday night's match at Etihad Stadium. Monfries was not injured, but the AFL's match review panel assessed the incident as intentional, low impact and body contact, worthy of 2 weeks, reduced to one with an early guilty plea. The Herald Sun has reported that Blues on-baller Bryce Gibbs will not sign a new contract with Carlton until he is confident in their list management and future direction. The Blues on-baller is being offered a long-term deal that could stretch to 4 or 5 years, with Carlton still in the box seat to re-sign him. The restricted free agent is keen to play at a club that can win a premiership and help him improve into the elite midfielder he is desperate to become. This came hot on the heels of Blues power broker Bruce Matheson slamming the club in the media as having the worst recruitment in the AFL and stating that the Blues were in diabolical trouble and 3 to 4 years away from success even if they start recruiting well right now. Carlton remains confident that Chris Judd will return for the round 3 clash with Essendon. Sam Doherty and Andrew Corazzo are also scheduled to return at the same time as Judd. Meanwhile, Dennis Armfield is out for a week with a knee injury and the Kierans, Byrne and Sheehan, are both out for a week with tendonitis. That's all for Blues news.
Okay, that's the news. Anybody have any thoughts on what's gone down?
Yeah, I don't know where that guy who wrote the article in the Herald Sun got that whole Bryce Gibbs waiting to see where we're going in what direction. Like, it sounds like he's got his quotes confused and he started writing what they wrote about Dangerfield and then included it in an article about Gibbs. The only real information he had is that his manager said he's continuing talks with Carlton, and as far as I'm concerned, you could write an article about that means he's putting talks off, or he's delaying them, or he's talking to him, so he really wants a new contract. Like, you could really write anything, and I think he's just gone the cheap route to try and sell papers, and it shows how poor the journalistic quality really is in Australian sport.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and also on the Matheson thing, I don't get why he's come out to slam a recruiting department that, A, predominantly isn't at the club anymore, B, would have been formed back when we had no money and we really had to get who wanted to come to us through those eras, and C, you know, obviously they've, once again, not here anymore. Like, we started to make the changes and correct such an issue, so why did he feel the need to slam us? Yeah, like, fair enough, come out and slam a real poor effort towards the end of the game and say, you know, what he wanted about the last quarter and stuff, but to come out and target such an issue that has already been addressed and that we seem to be fixing, and once again, is over the last 10 years when we really couldn't afford the best in the business.
Mm.
Like, really.
Yeah, I sort of, when he comes out and says that, I sort of, like, brush it off and go, yeah, whatever, champ, sort of thing. But then I was thinking about it, and really, the bad thing about this whole thing is the fact that he has come out and said something, which clearly means our club is nowhere near where we all expect it to be. I mean, you wouldn't imagine someone from the Hawthorn or Geelong, Fremantle, sort of, people who support the club in, who are well known, coming out there and just slamming us like that.
Yeah.
I think that's, it really sucks that that we're even in this position. So if that's what he thinks that needs to happen to sort of give the club a bit of a shake and keep moving things along, we are fixing stuff off field and on the field. So
is that the best way to go about it though?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
The media? No. I really don't think so.
Oh.
Like, because he's put so much money in that he can say what he likes. But see, that's the fact of the matter is, he lives in Queensland. He wouldn't even know what's going on inside the club really on a day-to-day basis. So just shut up. Like, I'm sick of these people that, you know, I pay my money every year as well. You don't see me getting out in the media and bloody having pot shots. Like, seriously, get a grip.
I agree with you. Yeah, he just doesn't know where our rant thread is. Somebody send him a link.
Yeah. I reckon he just needs to come on Big Footy and have a good go.
It wouldn't be nice if our forum was the Herald Sun.
Well, it pretty much is.
Yeah, that's where they get their information from.
Mm. Actually, well, speaking of information, John Ralph, who wrote the article about Bryce Gibbs will not sign a contract with Carlton until he's blah, 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 doesn't actually quote a source in there whatsoever for this information. Didn't even throw in the insider says.
He spoke to the manager, and the manager said he's continuing talks with the club. That's the one quote in the whole article.
It looks like a new ID article. Like,
it does.
They put on the cover a picture of Jennifer Aniston next to some actor, and it looks like they're about to kiss, and it's like, oh my God, Jen's cheating again. And then you flip to the page, and it's actually a scene that she's filming for a movie.
Yeah.
And it's just something to get you to buy the magazine or to click on the article. Like, obviously, he had a deadline to meet, and he didn't have anything real to write about, so he's pulled together an article out of his butt. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's an idiot.
I just think the quicker Bryce
signs, yeah, of speculation all year. So just get it done and move on. Like, I don't want it to drag on because then, you know, people start believing and they keep writing this crap and, yeah, it just doesn't do anyone any good. So
that's what I hate the most about free agency, I think, is the fact that it's so up in the air and there's so much speculation and you just don't know. But at the same time, I don't want it to go the same way as other sports where they, like, announce in round two that next year they'll be playing for North Melbourne instead of Carlton or whatever. Like, I just... I don't like free agency at all. I guess for obvious reasons, which you guys know. But.
And it's time for a brand new segment on the Big Footy Blues podcast. As we know, there are heroes and zeros around a football club every week. So each week, our esteemed panellists will let us know who in or around the football club is on fire and who is under the pump. Shandog and Happy Dude have volunteered to be the guinea pigs for the launch of this. So Shandog, it's over to you.
Sweet. On fire. I'm going to go with the obvious person, and that's Ed Curnow. He's picked up the top votes for the Big Footy Blues board, and definitely rightly so as well. He's kind of picked up where he left off from last year. He was a very consistent performer, and he did it again in round one. He had 19 disposals. He had a team high 8 tackles, and it was only one behind the actual game high, which was Wines. 4 clearances and 2 goals. So he contributed everywhere. He ran hard the whole game. I think everyone appreciated the effort he's put in there, and so he definitely rightly picked up our best on ground, according to the supporters anyway.
Well said. Happy Dude, you've got somebody on fire.
My on fire is David Allard. Not putting him in the on fire category as someone who's, you know, come in, lit up the game and won it off his own boot, but definitely considering to the expectations everyone would have had on him. A lot of people, including myself, probably had him in one of those in the line to just sort of play out the rest of the season in the VFL and sort of get cut or traded or whatever at the end of the year. But in the preseason, he seems to show signs of putting that determination that we've always seen in him towards getting his career back on track and pushing back into the side to take the AFL field for us for the year. And he's come out in his first game against Port Adelaide with 10 kicks, 8 handballs, 4 marks, 7 tackles and 2 goals. And that's, I think, is a pretty good game from someone of his calibre. He seemed to have taken his role and really taken it on. The 2 goals he kicked, pretty sure both of them were in the first quarter, and one of them was just as Port was starting to work their way back in the first quarter. He seemed to stand up then when we sort of needed someone else to help out, and he, yeah, really came on. If he can keep up this sort of determination effort, I can see a spot for him on our list in years to come.
Yeah, indeed. He seems to be a little bit of a favourite. I think he's Mick Malthouse's type of player. And
he's just a really good goal kicker as well. He's pretty accurate, so...
Oh, well, we certainly need those, don't we? Shandog, you got somebody under the pump, mate?
I do. Reluctantly, I do. It's Watson. I don't really feel it's justifiable, but I'm just going with what the crowd is saying here at the moment. He is under the pump because he did have a subpar game. Westhoff tailed him up in a couple of the marking contests. He made a couple of bad errors here and there. I think it was all compounded by the fact that Port was just absolutely dominating the centre in patches, and the defensive unit as a whole wasn't really that cohesive either. So when the odds are sort of stacked against you like that as a defender in your 17th game, it's no real surprise you had a poor one. But as far as a lot of supporters are concerned, he is under the pump to improve his performance, and it's probably because we all hope that he comes on and becomes like a top-level defender, probably more so than we expect, but better from him. But unfortunately, some people have already tried to write him off this season. And considering it is round one, I guess you can say he's under the pump, but it's probably not entirely fair to do so.
Yeah, well said. He got chased down coming out of the back line at one stage. You think lack of awareness or lack of talk?
It was definitely lack of talk, that one. That was such an easy sort of... You'd expect a lot higher than that.
Are you talking about in the last quarter?
Yeah.
That was Westhoff, I'm pretty sure, chased him down. I think it was Westhoff. That was not long after I saw him do the kick out, and he pulled up really tight. I thought he'd done a hamstring, so there's really no surprise for me that he wasn't quick enough to get away, because less than 5 minutes earlier, he was limping around the ground very badly.
But Robbo was like, right, I'm sorry, but he was right that, there.
Yeah, his teammates weren't talking.
It wasn't the only time that it happened during that game. That wasn't the only occasion where it happened. I think it might have been Hendo as well, in similar circumstances. Like, if you're not going to talk to each other, what's the point? Like, you're supposed to be a team. You need to communicate. So, like, I agree with you, Shandog. I think Watson's under the pump, but I think it's completely unfair and unwarranted. Yep. He needs game time. He's not going to learn anything in the VFL. If we want him to be a long-term defender, dropping him every second week is going to achieve nothing. He's only played 17 games. Like, he's a child.
Well, he's not going to learn. He's not going to learn in the twos. He's not going to learn how to defend AFL level forwards while playing as VFL forwards.
Exactly. Yeah, between the VFL and AFL. We just need to persist with him. And I think, if I remember correctly, we had the similar thing with Hendo when he first got drafted, and I remember him a bit of a whipping boy.
I remember him getting jeered at the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and look how well he's done out. So, look, these key position players always take a bit longer, but Watto's just, we've just got to persist, because really we have to see if he really has got it, because by the end of the year, if he doesn't show much, then I would expect him to be out the door. But I think this is a year that he has to play most games just to see how well, you know, how good he is.
Plus, as well, with defenders, AFL is a game that doesn't really have a defensive stat. It's got a couple that may indicate defensive efforts, but it doesn't have a really defensive stat like a lot of other sports. If the ball comes in 100 times to the forward line and you stop 95 of them and your opponent kicks 5 goals, you're considered beaten.
Yeah.
It's like cricket, isn't it? You could tonk a bowler for 15 fours, and the moment he gets out, he's all happy and clearing and, you know, cheering and clapping.
Yeah,
kind of dominated you the rest of the time except for that one ball.
Yeah, exactly. And while he didn't have the best game, Watson, but, you know, he did get lost a lot in their forward zone and stuff. I saw his opponents constantly trying to lose him, and occasionally they did get the better of him, and he wasn't the best, you know, getting position and with his awareness, but he wasn't the whipping boy of the game, I don't think. I think our midfield's defensive pressure was the big issue that we had.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't the worst on ground. So for someone who is one of the junior guys out there, for him to be the target for everyone's, like, vitriol, really, I was more disappointed, if I can be honest, in the Carlton supporters than the Carlton players for this game.
Yep.
Mm. Question without notice, though. What do people think of McInnes's game as well? Because it seemed like Watto, McInnes, and I guess to a degree Cruiser and Warnock were the guys who really copped a lot of the negative sort of comments and people questioning how we should be playing them or whether they should be playing at all. But what did you think of McInnes's effort anyway in the defence?
Yeah, he got beaten himself. He didn't seem to have that the sort of confidence, I don't know if that's the right word, but when he got the ball before he did his knee, he'd get it and take on the game and look straight for a target and kick it really well to them, and he just didn't seem to do any of that. He just seemed really unsure about his landing. He'd, like, when he did occasionally get the ball, he'd land or stop and then look unsure about what to do next or anything like that, and it was just pretty poor. I think he might need some time in the twos. If White's fit and good enough to come up, McInnes might need some time in the twos to get confidence in his own abilities back.
Well, I was talking earlier about efficiency percentages, and McInnes had the lowest in the side, 36% efficiency. So,
yeah, I think it is a confidence thing. I think you're right, mate.
But I think that's the problem across the board for a lot of our players. Like you see Bell do it as well. He's got the ball, and rather than using like the most obvious option or the first option, he sort of gets it and he stops and he looks. Like, I think it's something that across the board almost they need to work on, the younger guys especially, or the less experienced guys, is their decision-making processes need to be faster.
Gemmo's torpedo.
The record-breaking torpedo.
How long was it? In
90 metres.
Far out, it was like 75.
It went past the centre. It was
spatial awareness.
It just came straight back in and they kicked a goal. Like,
yeah, what a shame.
Yeah, I saw him, obviously from where I was sitting, I was right behind him, I saw him grab it and he's picked up the ball and he sort of held it in that torpedo shape and sort of like nudged my mum. I said, oh, watch this, he's going to torp it. And as soon as it came off the boot, we were sitting right behind him, I heard him. He was surprised that it went that far.
It was amazing. I have no spatial awareness, so I don't get how far it is, but it was impressive. But I thought it deserved so much more than what it got. Like, yeah. It was just awful. They had so much time to set up for it. Like, come on, guys.
I could see
it was
him.
The luck of the bounce.
If he could kick like that, he will make a lot of money in the NFL when his career is over at Carlton. He will be multi-millionaire.
Yeah, it was set play gone wrong, unfortunately. Because did Watto do the other one?
Yeah, Watto did the other one.
Yeah, both of them just went straight down Port's end.
Yeah. And then all these people, I don't know if you saw, but all these people were like, and what's with all our torpedoes? It's the worst part of our game plan.
There's three.
Like, really, guys? There were three.
Well, one of them was from Everett into our forward line, which we kicked a goal from. So.
Two bad bounces and a goal. Sorry, guys.
We had a cup against North Melbourne last year where Watson did one. It went over the top of him and Gala had the free run at the goals.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you try that again?
Well, we had a couple against Adelaide in the pre-season and the NAB Cup that didn't work as well. So, we might have to shelve it for a little bit.
It's exciting, though.
Mm. And it's boardwalk time as we take a stroll through the Big Footy Blues board to see what people are talking about this week. Under the boardwalk. Has anybody seen any posts or threads that have caught their attention?
Oh, there's a fair bit of ranting going on.
Who wants to talk about that?
I'm avoiding, because I don't think my sunshine and light is appreciated in those times.
I had to read through some of those threads because I thought my logic was if I had a good enough time laughing at Collingwood and Richmond meltdown, then I better, taste my own medicine and see what's going on in my own backyard. And wasn't very pretty, but it's still there. Some people raised some valid points. Other people just went, straight for the world's ending.
Well, look,
I think round one. Like, seriously, I don't. Oh God.
There is a great thread, the rate yourself after round one. That was King Kingston. I love that. Actually, it's quite a good idea. This will be a little bit reflective and sort of see how do we deal with round one. It's pretty good. The little poll involved as well.
What did you tick?
I think I did all of the above, which was I was calm and want to go suck my thumb and sook, then mad and et cetera, et cetera. So I really did go through that full gamut of emotion.
Yeah.
Really? I just ticked calm. I was calm. I was okay. I was copacetic, you know what I mean? Everything's going to be okay.
I was feeling sick before the game. I was like that keen to watch the football again. I think it was a bit, it let me down a little. I'm getting sad again. No, move on.
Yeah.
I suppose I should be happy in a sense that my Chicken Little thread got some use this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to read through that too. I thought I'm not ready to chuck the towel in yet. I won't be there till round 23 when the final siren's gone. Maybe he probably knows all about that. I don't give up easily. Yeah.
There was another thread that Thylacine 60 started. So what is player development? He started it back in November, but it's been bumped and people have got a bit of use out of it because it's very topical at the moment.
Old Thylacine.
Yeah, and the Wookiee started a fantastic thread about the Carlton history from 2007 to 2013, showing basically who's in control of the club, who they drafted, our crowds and our financial results.
That was amazing. Yeah, like,
brilliant job.
Put so much effort into that. That's
pretty tables and colours. Oh,
give him a break.
he's got, no, I'm giving him a break. I mean, we might see some glitter and sparkles on the next one.
Wookie, I appreciate your effort.
Some of your best work, Wookster. Good on you, mate.
Yeah.
Look, and also during our break from the podcast, we got around to finally awarding our poster of the year for 2013. And I just want to give a belated podcast congratulations to Medium Size Red.
Well done. look, moving on, just really quickly, since we've got, we're not playing this weekend due to the stupid split round. We'll have a little quick discussion about round two. We play next Thursday night. I'm assuming that the teams will come out on Wednesday and we might have to bump our podcast forward a little bit to keep it current. So we'll see how we're travelling there. Can you see any changes? Obviously, Walker's out, but any other changes that anybody can see happening for that game?
No,
Robinson.
Yeah, Mitch Robinson was a big disappointment for me. The amount of times he just bombed it into someone else's, like Port's arms.
He's always done that.
Yeah, I know, and it's always been so disappointing for me when he does it. But besides that, besides Walker, I think pretty much unchanged side. The players need to learn, like, if this is Mix 22 based on ability in pre-season, they need to learn to deal with this instead of being able to hide in the seconds. Send them out against Richmond and make them redeem it themselves.
Who comes in for Walker? I don't know. I haven't watched the Northern Blues, so I don't know.
Scotland, I think.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, probably.
The absolute standout star for the from the practice match for the Northern Blues was Nick Graham. 30 disposals, 17 contested, and 5 clearances. He, Scotland, had 33 disposals off the half-back line and through the midfield. And Dylan Buckley also had a really good game with his run through through defence with 20 disposals. Cameron Wood, 53 hit-outs. Not too bad. Said he partnered well with Casbolt.
If he's fit, bring him in.
And we won the clearances pretty comfortably. Keisha, 30 possessions as well. And said here that Tom Tomei almost single-handedly dragged the Northern Blues to victory. They just fell short with a vital final quarter display of 8 possessions and 2 goals. So good to see that Tomei's doing well. As an aside, does anybody remember? I completely forgot until I read this that we took Jack Anthony.
About him.
Yeah, 13 marks in defence.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's good for the Northern Blues, and he's good that he's not on our list, so we don't have to worry about elevation there. All right, time to wrap it up, I think. We'll say goodnight to Bluebell.
Good night, guys. Thanks for having me. Go Blues.
Yeah, and good night, Shandog.
Take it easy, everyone. Have a good week.
And good night, Happy Dude.
Good night, y'all.
Good night, Mevy.
Bye, guys.
And it's a good night from me, Nidal. Bye.